I'm going to call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. Welcome, everybody. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the February 18th meeting of the Government Operations Committee. Actually, Sam, I think we might redo the agenda. Representative Vang, excuse me, we might have Chair Murphy go first. There is one addition. I noticed there's a blank on the page two of it, just where we made an oral amendment to House File 1152. That blank should say line 7.2. So with that, since I made that suggestion, I guess I'll move approval of the minutes of the February 18th meeting of the Government Operations Committee. Any discussion?
As corrected.
As corrected, yes. Thank you. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. So I've heard it's poor form to keep the bonding chair waiting, so I will adjust the agenda slightly and ask Chair Murphy to come to present her bill. Is there a member who would like to move the bill?
So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 2456 to be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. Okay.
Representative Lee, Vice Chair Lee of the Bonding Committee moves House File 2456. Welcome to the committee, Chair Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate that you took us first.
My pleasure. Would you like to describe your bill?
Yes, there is a short technical amendment.
Okay.
It's in your packet.
Sure. Just give me one second. We have an A1 amendment. Representative Lee, would you also like to move that amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay, and it looks like it's just correcting a typo, basically. So any discussion to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the motion prevails. Chair Murphy, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 2456 is a bill for the Northern Bedrock Historical Group. And Inez Wildwood is the new director of, or new board chair. And they want to talk to you about the need for the program to have joint powers agreement. And this bill would allow them to have that. And she has someone with her, and they are all partners with the Historical Society.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Inez Wildwood, and I am the current chair of the board of directors of this nonprofit. And the nonprofit is Northern Bedrock Historic Preservation Corps, but the bill that you have in front of you is asking generically for Historic Preservation Corps to be given joint powers. And with me, who will speak after me, is...
I'm Amos Johnson.
And Amos is a former Corps member from our program who is currently working in doing historic preservation after going through our program. So we're a nonprofit. We're a unique AmeriCorps program and very youthful. We've had Corps members out now for 5 seasons. But we're unique in the United States, the only Corps that is focusing on teaching historic preservation trade skills, and the service work that the Corps members do is around the state of Minnesota working on historic sites doing preservation work. Today we're the only historic preservation Corps, but there's lots of interest around the country and other interest in Minnesota about our model and what we're doing, so we believe you will see more. The legislation as it's written is adding historic preservation corps to have joint powers. And the reason that we need joint powers is in order to partner with government and organizations in the state of Minnesota on historic preservation projects. The legacy fund legislation reads that Northern Bedrock Historic Preservation Corps and Conservation Corps Minnesota and Iowa should be prioritized in partnering on doing work on our historic needs in Minnesota. And even though we're in there as a priority, we can't partner directly with organizations to do that service work for them because we don't have joint powers. So that's the simple ask. Our core members learn all kinds of skills, and Amos is going to give you a view of that in a moment too. But we bring in technical experts who teach them masonry skills and wood restoration and carpentry and window glazing and cleaning, resetting and repairing monuments and cemeteries, plaster, painting, wood refinishing, and more. And we do projects all over the state of Minnesota. Our core members are all doing a term of service, if you know a bit about AmeriCorps. And so with us, they do, most of them do a six-month service term, some do 3 months. They live and work in six-person crews. They often camp on site of the historic structure or wall, whatever they're working on, or near the cemetery. They learn as a part of being on these teams, teamwork, communication skills, lots of problem-solving skills. They learn how to successfully navigate the diversity on the crew, diversity of culture, life experiences, and perspectives. So they learn a tremendous amount about work, teamwork, and being adults in our society. They learn to be on time in the morning. They learn to do their chores because, the, you know, how happy the rest of the crew would be with them if they didn't clean up and didn't do their piece to get dinner ready and all. So they get a lot of preparation to go into the workforce. I was on the Governor's Workforce Development Council for 12 years, chaired it for four. I got to visit almost every workforce development and educational program in the state of Minnesota. And I'm chair of this board because I see this as a model that serves us well for two reasons. It gets young people an opportunity to get their hands dirty and find out what they're interested in. And then they can go into an apprenticeship program, or they can go to a trade school, or they can go on to college and decide to be historians, but it gives them 6 months to gain a lot. And that's why I'm passionate about it. The other half of it is, it gives us a number of folks out in the field every year focusing on preserving the many historic sites in Minnesota. So with that said, I'm going to turn you over to Amos Johnson to tell you about his experience as a core member.
Thank you, Ms. Wildwood. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I want to start off by telling you a story that I think encapsulates what this program meant for me. We were working in an old cemetery on a gravel road nestled amongst the cornfields. It was a wet summer, so everyone was dirty and tired after a hard day of cleaning and repairing broken monuments. But we wanted to reset one last toppled stone before we stopped for the day. It was a big one that had fallen over and been stuck in the ground for several years, according to the site manager. We gathered around the stone, brainstorming and experimenting, teaching each other what we'd learned, eventually coming together with a plan to right it. The groans and straining of lifting the stone gave way to my favorite moment, the name on the marker being revealed. Here was the person who we were working for, the loving mother who had been living long ago and experienced a world entirely foreign to mine. I don't know them or anyone who knew them, but as I wiped the dirt from the grooves of their name, my hand running across the dates of their life, I felt a connection to who they were and this land they came from. This person and this place mean something. While their memory lay toppled in the dirt, hidden from the world, a little of that meaning was lost, but now we restored an acknowledgement of the importance of a life. Northern Bedrock, I believe, taught me a lot. It, because of its unique system of rotating responsibilities, each core member gets to be a leader for a week, and then they get to be taking documentation or in charge of food. Everyone shares responsibilities and is able to learn how to manage communication and group dynamics and everything. We also learn technical skills of carpentry. We worked at replacing the stockades at Grand Portage or a deck at an old CCC building up north. We learned how to do window restoration and masonry on the cemetery projects, plaster repair in an old Catholic church in Duluth that was being turned into a foster home. And what I really appreciated was that all of these skills we can now bring back to whatever homes we have in the future to be able to maintain and repair them. We also worked with a diverse cohort. I met people from across the whole country and across Minnesota who came here for the first time for this program. There's a lot of economic and racial diversity. I come from a small rural Minnesota town where I didn't get to interact with a lot of people outside of my race or economic level. And so it was a new opportunity for that. And what I really loved was that I was able to travel around the state and learn about different places from down in southwestern Minnesota to Grand Portage. It also gave me direction. Before Northern Bedrock, I was a little directionless in life. I was looking for what Friedrich Buechner describes as the place where my soul's great hunger meets the world's great need. I found that with this program, at the end of the summer, I had made lifelong friends, learned lifelong skills, and got a job doing historic window restoration that stemmed directly from one of the projects I worked on. I don't know what the future holds for me, but I know that I will always have what Northern Bedrock gave me. I'll finish back where I started. Around the Loving Mother's newly righted monument, we stood, a motley and muddy crew comprised of recent immigrants from Laos, some out-of-staters, some city folks, and some greater Minnesotans, none of whom would have known each other except for this program, but now all gathered together here to this spot in the service of something greater than ourselves. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Same as, sure.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 2456? Okay. Seeing none, is there any member discussion? Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How do you go about publicizing this organization, and what are the qualifications to be part of it?
Ms. Wildwood.
We have a web presence because the age group that we're trying to get to come do service terms are on the internet. So we do a lot of that. You should have our annual report. We distribute that far and wide. And we are recruiting young adults that are willing to do service learning work for 6 months. They do not get paid. They get a living stipend, and they become eligible under AmeriCorps requirements for an educational benefit at the end of their term. If they successfully complete the term, they get 20, do you remember what it is, Amos?
$2,900
toward future education, and it can lay there. So even though Amos may not be going to school now because he's working in preservation work, he may decide that he wants to go add to his skill set at a technical school or a college in the future, and that fund will be there for him because he completed. So we are looking for individuals who want to learn, are ambitious enough, and are willing to do. They do hard 10-hour days, 7 days on, and then they get 5 days off. So it's 6 months of learning how to work. And when he talks about being dirty, yeah, you should see those crews come in after 7 days of camping and doing this work in all weather.
Okay. Representative Mason?
Do you go into the high schools?
Yes.
Swallowed.
Thank you.
Yep.
May I add to that quickly? We've had students the last 2 years, and hopefully we will this coming year, from the GAP program here in the Twin Cities, as well as some high schools up north. They have to be 18 years old in order to serve on the cruise right now. One of the things that we hope to in the future is to go down lower in age and start working with younger high school students. In order to do that, this, if we get joint powers, will greatly help us because we'll be able to partner with organizations differently and find a physical space, which we're also working on, where we can do some indoor work in the winter with high school students.
Thank you. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Wildwood, I'm just noticing that you had done a restoration project in St. Cloud at the Riverside Park, tuck pointing, and you cleaned a rock wall and staircase, and thank you for that. But I'm also wondering how far in advance or what is the process of picking projects? And then once you pick a project, do you kind of try to recruit in that area as well?
Ms. Wildwood.
We, our process is we travel around the state. We have board members in many historic preservation groups, and we work with the Historical Society. So we're always looking and talking with folks about if you have something that these young adults can learn and do at the same time, because this is experiential learning. We would bring in a masonry, a rock specialist for a project like we did in St. Cloud, who teaches the core members initially and is available to them to help problem solve as they go through doing the work to make sure it's done right. But we're not, you know, like hiring a regular construction crew. So we look for folks that have projects that we can do and have the funds available to them to pay for supplies and those sorts of things for the project. We don't recruit specific to a project because at this point we have crew members that are doing 6 months of service. All the different models that we could go off in, we have a ton of ideas. We're just stuck being very small right now.
Thank you. Representative Tice.
Is there any signage? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Wildwood, is there any signage or anything when you're doing a project that's that kind of says this is who's doing it, and do people stop and ask you about them?
Ms. Wildwood.
We only this year really began to advertise where we were. So now we have plackets on our vans, and everybody wears their T-shirt, their little uniform for Northern Bedrock. And we have been asking the local media to cover the project. We also this summer added workshops for community adults that would like to come learn how to do this, like how to reglaze and restore old windows in their house. And so the core members, when we were in Duluth, we did a wall at Harrison Park this summer. And the core members actually worked with the technical expert and our staff to teach, I think it was about 20, 17 to 20 adults from Duluth that signed up to learn how to fix a rock retaining wall because they had a tucked under garage or whatever. So we're trying to expand the knowledge. It is our goal to get this kind of trade knowledge broadly to people.
Representative Tice?
Just one more follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And probably Mr. Johnson, I just wanted to say thank you. I have a remodeling background, and it's really hard to keep a historic home historic. You can't just put in new windows. You have to redo or find somebody to do the existing window. So thank you. I really love keeping our historic homes historic. So finding out that there's a process that folks can do this is really, really satisfying. Good for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment and then a question. I thank you, Inez Wildwood, for all your decades of work in workforce. She's well known in the economic development world for being an advocate for promoting workforce throughout the state of Minnesota, but especially in northeastern Minnesota. And now she's retired, and she's taking her passion to this effort. So my question to you, Inez, is with this legislation that would allow you to enter into a joint joint powers agreement, what breakthrough does that give you? What difference does that make for your ability to work?
Ms. Wildwood.
I am so far from an expert on this part of governmental operations. But I can tell you that right now there is legislation, 21st Century Conservation Corps, federal legislation that passed a few years ago, that says that all AmeriCorps programs in the United States have joint powers to partner directly with federal government agencies. So national parks could call us and say, hey, would you bring your crews in here and see what you can do about this deck on the back of a 150-year-old log home that was built into a lodge later by the CCC. And so we can partner directly. Without joint powers in Minnesota, they either have to put out bids, and we don't bid because we're not contractors. We're teaching young adults how to gain these skills. And they would have to go through a bidding process in order to have us come in and do that. So joint powers would allow us to do an agreement with the DNR or with Minnesota Historical Society. And so it'd be a lot less administrative for everybody, and it would open doors for us to do things. We'd, you know, well, a project for us is 7 days for a crew of six young adults. We can get a lot done, but we don't guarantee that we'll finish all that they need. We can say, we're gonna teach them, they're gonna be learning, guarantee they're gonna work hard.
Representative Lehman.
You may think you don't know much about that end, but you just gave a really good answer, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lehman. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what is the, Manorville is a very historic city, had, you know, the Hubble House and other things, and I think anyone over the age of 14 has to have 1800 circuit, you know, the old clothing, because every time they have a festival, which is almost every week, a large portion of the citizenry come out with vintage clothing. They had some flooding, and some of the stuff, I think it was done during the Depression era, you know, stone walls and structures, and then Casson, which is right next to them, there's been some discussion of repairing the park area. They've got those walls and structures. How would they communicate, you know, with the organization?
Just give us a call and send us an email.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, it's okay. That, Ms. Wildwood, thank you for your response. Representative Quam?
Well, thank you. And I normally pass this back so you can use it for another one, but I think I will hand this to the Historic Society that's helping to look at fixing up these things. And thank you.
Yep, thank you, Representative Quam. No other members? I beg your pardon? Okay, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is really, really neat. I didn't really know much about it. I'm really happy to see that some of your key funding is through Legacy. And I'm just, so my question, Ms. Wildwood, I'm just, or Chair Murphy, if is does this group receive multiple grants, or is it your financial report here, is it just like one year of reporting? I'm just curious how many years you receive funding.
Ms. Wildwood, if you could keep your answer fairly short. I know we have another bill with several testifiers.
I'm looking to see if I believe we have had funding from the Historical Society for about 5 years. And it's generally, they have given us a large sustaining amount of money because they believe in what we're trying to do. And then we have had some little grants.
Okay. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. It looks like an amazing program, and I think when Chair Murphy first started the Legacy Committee, I was lucky enough to serve on it, but part of our goals was to get youth involved and out doing work around the state, and certainly this achieves part of that goal. But so that's hats off to Chair Murphy. But also, I don't know if you know, Chair Murphy lives in a historic home, and someday if you have a chance, all of you should stop in and visit with her and have her tell the and not at her home necessarily, but in her office and hear the story, because it actually is an amazing story of the historic home that she lives in. So.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Any other discussion?
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
One of the first things that the Heritage Preservation Group worked on was the landscaping at McQuaid Harbor. As you go up the shore, that was the first safe harbor, and it was really bad. Mm-hmm. And the group of kids came in and worked the summer, and so the landscaping that's there now and mature looks really great.
Great.
Unless there's been a storm since.
Seeing no additional member discussion, did you have any closing remarks?
No, just that I told that it could go to the general register.
Yep, that is the Representative Lee made the motion to send it to the general register, so he renews his motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, members.
So, Representative Vang, you care to come forward? So before making the motion, I just feel like all committee members should be aware that it is Representative Vang's birthday today. So yeah. So I will, yes. I think I heard some of our members singing happy birthday in caucus the other day, and it was pretty appalling, so I will not ask members to sing. But just encourage everyone, when you see Representative Vang in the hallways, please wish her a happy birthday. So I will move House File 2725, be moved to the Education Policy Committee, and I understand you have an amendment as well.
Yes, that's Vang? Correct, Chair, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so let's see. Yep, and the amendment just changes some dates. So is there any discussion to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Vang, would you like to present your bill?
Thank you, Chair Firebird, and I appreciate the shout out. So I'm State Representative Samantha Vang, here to present a House File 2725, which authorizes the Osseo School Board to approve the creation of election districts by adoption and proper filing of a resolution creating the election districts. In 2006, the legislature did approve a similar bill for the Minneapolis School District. And as you all may know, currently most school districts are around 6 to 7 board members elected at large for 4-year terms. But we are here today to approve Osseo School District to create 5 election districts and 2 at-large seats to form a 7-member board. And currently in Osseo School District, there are 6 board members elected at large. And my testifiers today will go on to further explain why this is important and beneficial to the community.
Thank you. So just to the testifiers, if you could just please identify yourself first and try to keep your comments to a few minutes, that would be appreciated. So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
My name is Cindy Shevlin, or Dr. Cindy Shevlin Woodcock, and I am a resident of Brooklyn Park. But I'm also a college professor, so telling me to limit my lecture is going to be a little tough here. I've been an educator for over 40 years. I have taught in rural, urban, and suburban school districts in Minnesota, and I was a candidate for the Osseo School Board in 2018. Almost 30 years ago, my husband and I made a very deliberate decision to move to Brooklyn Park so that our children could attend the Osseo School District. We wanted to live in a community that was racially and ethnically diverse. And I knew that the Osseo School District had an excellent reputation because I had taught special education in that district in the late 80s. When I retired from the Minnesota Department of Education, I ran for a position on the Osseo School Board mostly because I was concerned that there was no representation from the eastern side of the district on the current school board. The school board, or the Osseo Schools, is the fifth largest school district in the state of Minnesota. It includes multiple communities such as Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Maple Grove, Cochrane, Rogers, Dayton, and Plymouth. The district has 21,000 students pre-K through grade 12, 17 elementary schools, 4 middle schools, 3 senior highs, an ALC, 2 early childhood centers, 2 special program sites, and an adult basic ed center. Can you imagine the number of signs you'd need to cover that amount of territory when you're campaigning? This puts it out of reach, resource-wise, for many people who are interested in leading our school district. As I prepared for my campaign, I decided to visit as many schools as I possibly could and visit with school leaders and their staff about their views in the district, both positive and concerning. I spent hours knocking on doors, talking with the community, attending open houses, visiting families, and I tried as hard as I could to listen to the concerns of the community. What saddened me was the clearly accepted norm of the east side versus the west side, and what was often referred to as the Lake Wobegon Middle. The haves and the have-nots, poverty and wealth, immigrant and refugee communities versus white middle-class America, and the perception that some schools in our district drain resources while other schools are overcrowded and stretched to meet the need. We've all heard about Jim Crow of the North, redlining, segregated communities, and a lack of affordable housing. We know that a few privileged individuals hold the power and try to control all decision making. We also know that they will not give up control easily or willingly. After the election, I approached Senator John Hoffman and House Speaker Melissa Hortman, who are my representatives, and I asked them for help. I said we needed a voice for all parents at the school board level. We worked with their legislative aides and staff from Education Minnesota to formulate a bill requesting equal representation for students, parents, and families in the Osseo District. At the same time, I talked one-on-one with some of our local school board members and asked them to put this on their agenda. I was repeatedly told no. What they've done now to try to create some illusion of community involvement is they've started to have what they call listening sessions. And it's an interesting concept because there's no accountability to the listening sessions. They're typically held at 5 or 5:30 in the afternoon when parents and families are very busy. And what's been happening is they've been attended by the same people who have voted them in. So I am concerned that the listening sessions are not going to be as effective at creating an equity lens. You, as the Minnesota legislature, have an opportunity to create educational equity in the Osseo School District. You have the power to legislate the Osseo School Board to create an integrated, unified, and strong school community by developing a 7-person board with elected representation from all wards. I am asking you to do what is right and empower the district to intentionally design a student-centered, inclusive, and culturally responsive school leadership team to lead in the 21st century. Our students and families deserve your support. We know that the School Board Association opposes this. That's very disappointing. First, this bill allows for a citizen vote that the school board itself has blocked. Second, this gives us a chance to try out an alternative to the current statute and use an equity lens to look at representation on our school boards. This is why session law exists. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Shevlin Woodcock. I'm not sure who's next. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Denise Tukla. I live in Maple Grove. I'm a mother of five boys, four in which still in the school district. One is off to college right now. He graduated from Maple Grove Senior High. I have benefited from having people living in my community that represent me and represent my kids on the school board. In 2016, a day right after President Donald Trump was elected, my son walked into his school bathroom and was welcomed with a graffiti. Sorry, I get emotion for every time I think about that. He was welcomed with a graffiti reading on the bathroom stall, calling him Black Monkey, Go Back Africa. This is Trump territory. My son was scared and terrified. Up to this day, he's still terrified from there. Sorry. How the school board treated me and my kids was unfair. How they represented us was unfair. What was the impact? 1 week of suspension for the kids that did that, and they were back in school with my kids, which is very unfair. I'm sorry. Having someone living in my community that know the strength of all people that represent the district, that represent the district that is on the board. I live in Maple Grove, where a majority of our current board members live. I do not feel it's right for other districts to have everybody that is on the board right now lives in Maple Grove. Imagine you living in other part of the school district and you don't have somebody there that represents you, that represents your kids. How will you feel? I believe and I know as a mother that this bill is very important. This bill is going to help other districts. This bill is going to help other parents. This bill is going to help other kids. And I think it's time that the district accept and adapt this change to allow this bill to go through. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Denise Butler. I currently work for an organization called African Career Education and Resource, Inc. I am the program manager there at ACER, and we are a community-based, issue-based organization focusing on housing equity, transportation equity, and basically whatever issues or impacts that the community is having. I'm also a 24-year Brooklyn Park resident, a mother of a 10-year-old in the district. I'm here to be a voice for her and her classmates, my community, and the parents. As a parent, we want the best for our children. Their education is the foundation for their success, and we don't get a do-over, so we need to get it right. Currently, the Osseo School Board members are not the best representation of what our community needs for our schools to be equitable for all students. I share with you separate conversation I've had with my daughter. In second grade, she transferred from Edinbrook Elementary to Weaver Lake Elementary School. And about halfway into her second grade year, she came home and she said, Mommy, are there not any teachers of color, any black teachers here in the world? And I was taken back from that conversation. I really didn't know how to respond to her at that time, because I just felt I was sending my daughter to a school that was representative of her, and she was getting the right education, and she was in an environment that she felt welcome and she felt safe. But apparently that was not the reality. And then another conversation recently took place this year. She is now a fifth grader at Weaver Lake Elementary. And she came and informed me and said, Mommy, we finally got a teacher of color at Weaver Lake. And I asked her, I said, Sasha, is that really, really important to you? She said, yes, Mommy, it's really important to us. And found out over the years, my daughter herself, I guess she's learned from her mom and became a little advocate. She doesn't get in trouble at school, but she sees what happens to other students. And she came to me and said, Mommy, I noticed that all the black kids are the ones that are going to the behavior specialist staff. And I said, how do you feel about that? She said, well, I went to go meet with the principal. I said, oh, wow. She said, yeah. I told them we didn't like that, and they organized a conversation for us, the students. I know it's because of the mother that she has and the parents that she has, she feels able and capable of doing such things, but the reality is that there was no staff that she felt she could be able to push her and advocate for her, and so she had to do it for herself and for her classmates. For the past 3 years, community members, labor organizations, and community organizations have showed up, demonstrated, and received letters of support from city council members. I know my council, the Brooklyn Park City Council, have lent a voice towards this conversation around equal representation in the Osceola School Board. To ask that the school board move to have better representation, and repeatedly they have ignored us and denied us. What are they afraid of? That this could be the pathway to closing the achievement gap that we all know that exists here in the state of Minnesota when it comes to students of color. In the state of students of color. Isn't this the goal? Anyone that doesn't support and adhere to the voices of the students, parents, and community must have a hidden agenda. So they must want to continue to see the divide. They must want to continue to see the achievement gap exist the way it is, and even further when it comes to our students of color here in the state of Minnesota. Anyone who doesn't support and hire to our voices must have this agenda. Therefore, we ask that our elected officials hear our voices and pass this bill, because we really need equal representation on the Osceola School Board District. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Butler. I have one other person who signed up, Kirk Schneiderwind. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and
good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Kirk Schneiderwind, Executive Director for the Minnesota School Boards Association, and so I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the bill today. And so one of the things that, as a statewide association representing all of our public school districts and school boards, one of the things that is one of our core values is about allowing the locally elected boards making those decisions. And we contend that those who are closer to the action or closer to the decision have more to weigh and evaluate and understand what is happening in their community to make those decisions. So we are an association that's been around celebrating our 100th year as a statewide organization. And I think one of the things that we would say is on this, related to this bill, is that there is a process today. There is a process today that the board and or through the public petition, that is allowable to move to election districts. So of our 331 districts, we know about 18 of our districts have election districts. And in large part, those have been done by the communities. They are consolidated districts in northern Minnesota and western Minnesota, and there are some districts in the metro area who have made that decision to move forward. And so from our perspective, it is one of those decisions, again, that as school board members and community members should be able to come together and make the decision that is best for their students. One of the things that we see among our school board members today is generally they work their way from, whether it's a PTO director, into a committee in the school district, but those are people who have been active at the grassroots level from the beginning. And one of the things that we've talked to our newly elected board members is moving away from the school district or school building and student perspective to now you are a board member who is in charge of the whole district. And you need to look at all of the students' needs. And that's one of the things that we see when board members elevate into their role as a school board member, is they take that broader view, a broader system view of the school district, to make sure that all of their kids' needs are being met. And I will contend that most, if not all, of our districts, our school boards and school board members take this view and recognize the responsibility that they have to look at all of their students and making sure that those issues are being resolved or being solved for their students. And let's be clear, I mean, this bill would require the Osceola district to do this. I mean, this isn't an option. This is a bill that would say you must do this, must set up these election districts. We would contend, in summary, to say that that under current law, there are two processes. The board can either do it, set up election districts, or through petition, the public can move in that direction as well. So, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, I stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Schneiderwind. Let me just see, is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 2725? Okay, seeing none, we will go to member questions. So, okay. Hold on, I saw a few hands there. Anyone on this side? Okay, I'll try to. All right, Representative Sauk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the representative of the board could come down. For context to my comment, it's useful probably for you to know that I went to college in 1968. So I've got a somewhat of a history, both in longevity and in life experiences, that go to this issue. Although your statements are completely, and here as I could tell, would be completely accurate and interpreted correctly in their general sense. The United States, Minnesota directly, and we as people have failed at opportunities along the way. Some of those failures have become very big deals. A number of those failures have hurt whole populations. I think that could be the doorway through which I would separate from your justifications and your cautions and say it's become a little too obvious that there is the need for direct motivation. And that's the reason. It has nothing to do with whether I believe the law is sound or if the precedent is there and the intention is there in terms of structural and the intention of how these organizations come on. But sometimes it is in the proof of life. And I gave you the context of my life so that you would know this is not just a jump up and respond, an emotional response. I was a school teacher for 18 years earlier in my life, and so I have very intimately understood the process of school board member discussions and how they deal with the tensions that come up. It is not an easy job. It's a very difficult job. But the difficulty is rising above and being able to see where are we going and are we doing something here that we need to change the direction a bit. Do we need to lean on this so that we might be doing better work? So I'll offer to you that's my opinion, and I probably would vote with that as my guidance. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and as a person that represents a part of the Osseo School District and is a proud graduate of the Osseo School District, who grew up on the eastern side of the district and have lived there most of my life, some of the issues that are going on here that I think this is trying to solve is the equity issue piece of it, and it's been something that's been simmering in the district for a long time. Before I was elected to the House, there were complaints about this, and there were people from the western half of the district, and it's basically an east-west split that basically said, well, if you don't like the way we're being run, we'll split you off, and you can have your own school district, but that would be all the older schools that needed update and maintenance, and they would get all the new schools that, you know, the example of the grade school I went to was built in 1957-58, and some of the newer schools on the other side are just being built because it's a still growing district. And again, it's a large district, stretching all the way from the Minneapolis border on the east side all the way out to Corcoran, where there are still farming issues. So it's a big district. I think this would help do that. Historically, there has been some representation from the eastern half of the district. But for the last few years, and for most of the time that I'm aware of, there has not been. It's kind of all been clumped in. My understanding is right now it's like a 2-mile square area where all the board members live, and I don't think that gives them a perspective of what other parts of the district need. So I will be supporting this bill.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Ranking Member Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it is saddening to hear the testimony on an appalling situation. And, well, frankly, I like the idea of having a mix between geographic and district-wide, so you get the two perspectives. And I would just, you know, we're doing the census. The counties and cities are drawing up precincts. They're looking at polling locations. So I'd like to see language that says that this would be done in cooperation or consultation with the county and the cities and those other entities for two reasons. One, I think they're used to this type of drawing activity. And two, a successful school has community involvement. Successful school has partnership between the school district and the communities and the people that are encompassed in it. I was on a school board, and I was also on the Zed Governing Board, which is several districts get together and cooperate for special ed in different areas. And what I've seen is to overcome a lot of the issues we've got, you've got to have that community involvement and identity with the school. My school district a couple years ago had 100% graduation. They fell down to, I think it was 98.6 or right around 99% graduation. We're below the state average for tax capacity. We were the bottom for regular school districts and per pupil funding. But I think a lot of our success was maintaining that community tie. And I would hope that if this goes through and there are regional community-based board members, that that would help build this community tie and success. Because a lot of the stuff tried for decades now hasn't. And so, you know, best wishes, but I think the bill could be improved a little bit, and, you know, bringing the School Board Association, some of the other parties together, you might be able to have a better outcome. And the process, as much as you can make it cooperative as opposed to confrontational, I think everybody that's probably on that school board cares. And everybody that's not on the school board that is trying to change things cares. But it's the conversation I think will make better improvement, especially if there's a transition. So best of wishes on this.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, coming from Minneapolis, I just want to say that the success of what we have done in Minneapolis is really crucial for all of our students. You know, coming from North Minneapolis, where we have communities of color and, you know, low wealth communities, and having that representation on the board is crucial for the families that I represent. And, you know, having a voice when they are going to the district, and also in the District of Minneapolis, having at-large school board members, I think that provides that perspective. And I just want to say thank you to Representative Vang for bringing this forward, so that all of our communities that are, you know, living in these individual districts are represented at the table. And my question to the School Board Association, you know, you have heard from the community members here today, and it's, they went through the process and nothing came out of it. What are some of the solutions that the School Board Association have brought forth to alleviate some of the concerns that they have?
Well,
Mr. Scheidewin.
Mr. Chair, so, Mr. Vang, Representative Vang, so this isn't a, normally this isn't a, we don't see this type of bill very often. So one of the things that we know that a lot of our boards do today that perhaps even 5 years ago or 10 years ago that they didn't do, is are very much heavy in recruiting or going out and seeking representation to run for school board seats as well. And so we also know that there are a number of districts that have equity initiatives. And we understand that school board, many of those decisions are start at the top, right? And so if you have a policy around equity and a policy about diversifying teacher workforce representation on the board, and those are initiatives, then boards will initiate that, and the administration will initiate that as well. And all of that really is driven by the student achievement issue, right? I mean, that's where we our ultimate focus is for our boards and administrators is trying to close the gap. And if there are efforts at the local level to be able to go out and find representation to encourage them to participate and encourage them to run, and oftentimes it starts at the elementary level, getting them involved at the school early, then they get they kind of understand it, and then they work their way up through whether it's a committee or it's committee of the board, and then perhaps run for the board as well is another way to get more people and more parents engaged in that process as well. So there are efforts, and even as an association, what we're trying to do is encourage more board members of color to get engaged with the process because of the achievement gap issue, and trying to solve that and give their perspective as well. So we know there's a lot of local efforts to do that, to get people involved. Could we do more? Sure. But I think we understand the importance of it and the value of it.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will hope that the Associated will understand and realize that a lot of these communities have not traditionally participated in the process. And when you're reaching out to them to recruit them to run for these positions, are we being intentional and, you know, right, getting to them where they're at so that we're not expecting them to attend these PTO meetings? And if they're not at the PTO meetings, we're missing them. And so for the Association to really think about what can we do to reach out to these families. And like I said, at the end of the day, you know, we have heard the stories of the testifiers, and if they said that they are going through the process and it's not working for them, are you expecting us to wait 4 more years for another elections where that's 4 years of our children's education, where we're continuing to see this disparity gaps in the state of Minnesota? You know, when we see the outcomes for the state as a whole, we are one of the best in the country. But when we look at the disparity gaps, all of our students of color and indigenous students are the last in the country. And so this is, you know, a real life situation for all of our communities, especially our communities of color. And so I will hope that the association will work with these community members to really find a solution. If, you know, if there's opposition to this, what are some solutions that you could do to work with these community members so that they could feel like they have that representation when they are out there engaging with their elected officials at the school board level? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, the process that you were explaining, has any school board actually done that in the last couple of decades?
Mr. Schneiderwind.
Mr. Chair, so I don't have a timeline for those, but we've got about 18 districts who have done this, and a majority of those are usually done through a consolidation agreement. So if you have some communities in greater Minnesota that they want to ensure that they have representation from Starbucks versus Wilmer. And so they're intentional about that to make sure that there's representation, because consolidation is a big deal. You know, community schools may be closed or consolidated in some way. And so they want to make sure that that voice is there. And the boards are intentional about that. And the boards and community are intentional about, we want the voice from Starbucks to be on the board. And they, as part of the consolidation plan, will do that. So I think the one that's included in your background was the most recent one that we're aware of was in 2006, where the legislature took action to create some wards in the Minneapolis district. But by and large, the rest of these have been driven by local decisions, making those decisions for what's best of their school district.
Okay. Representative Mason?
A couple of comments. First of all, many years ago, I used to be involved with the League of Women Voters, and I was co-chair of a study on school desegregation like in the late 80s or 90s. Still have all the tapes from that. And what bothers me is we are still dealing with the same problems today. So we haven't learned a whole lot over the years. But the other thing is, from the communities that I live in, I've seen this when I first moved to Eagan, for instance. We never had a school board member on 191. It was always people from Burnsville. And these, you know, no matter who's serving on the school board, to me, it's got to be one of the most challenging jobs there is. And the people that are have the jobs, they are confident. And they, you know, I know they're trying to do the best. But nevertheless, perception is so very, very important. And if you don't see somebody on your city council, on your school board, that is from your area, I know people feel they're being disenfranchised. And the fact that there are opportunities to change this, both at the city levels and at the school district, but I have never seen anybody do that. And that to me is disheartening. And certainly when you know the issues that we are facing in the state right now. So as I said, we need to be more aggressive. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Representative Cagle, quickly, I know we have one other bill on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one of the voices that's missing in this is the student voices. And as a graduate of Edinburgh Elementary and Osseo Junior High and Osseo Senior High, we knew what, you know, that there were schools that got more resources. I didn't know why. You know, it's been 20 years since I graduated high school, but we were told as Osseo graduates that we were on the wrong side of the tracks. We were told that Maple Grove High School was built in the shape of a maple leaf so that when you flew over, it looked pretty from the sky. And these are just some of the things that, you know, that the students are hearing. And so the students know that there are certain schools in the district that are getting more resources, that are getting more attention, and that it makes me sad that this hasn't been resolved since the 20 years that I graduated from high school. So thank you, Representative Bank, for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. And thank you, Rep. Bank, for bringing this forward. You know, I think that Representative Lee really covered, along with the testifiers, thank you so much to all the community people who are supporting this. I think that we kind of have established, like, what the issues are that we're trying to address really well in Rep. Lee's comments and the experiences of the testifiers. you know, if the Minnesota legislature was elected in the way that most school boards are elected, you would only have to come to Hennepin County for votes. You wouldn't have to visit any other part of the state. My district, you know, I have a very socioeconomically and racially diverse district. The parts of my district that are majority people of color vote at rates that are 20 to 25% lower than the wealthier, whiter parts of my district. So I could probably like just campaign in the wealthier, higher turnout parts of my district and be fine and win. I choose to do engagement work in all parts of my district, of course, like we all do. But, you know, and again, in Minneapolis, it's the same. When we had an all-at-large school board, you only had to go to two of the 13 wards to win a citywide election. You know, so that means that Representative Lee's ward, like, you didn't even need to go there and talk to people and listen to people about what their concerns were. So I guess it's just to say, you know, that because of spatial patterns of inequity and these big differences in voter turnout, we need to make sure that that we're ensuring that elected officials are as close as possible to the people that they're representing. And I just think that this is a really great effort to move us in that direction. And so thank you again, Representative Vang, for your work on this.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vang, first of all, happy birthday. Second, I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. I know this has been an extremely challenging topic And I know that there is a lot of passion around this particular issue. And I will tell you in full disclosure that I do represent part of this Osseo School District, specifically Maple Grove and Osseo. And for anyone who knows, those are two very, very different communities from an economic standpoint, but nonetheless, I do represent them both. I have, in full disclosure, wrestled a little bit with this particular bill. And I will tell you why. There's two things. It's about, for me, goals and expectations. If the goal of this bill, which I believe it is to make sure that we have greater representation across the district reflective of the communities in which surround, or those communities that surround each and every school, I think this is a very fantastic bill. And I think it does exactly that. It is very good for that. And I have to be upfront in discussing before I get to my next that the other goal, of course, and I think that I hear a lot of that underlying here, is about finding a path forward that is both more equitable and really focusing in on things like closing opportunity gaps. And I will say that I am in full favor of both of those goals and have been vocal about that as well. I have to be honest, however, when we talk about that as the goal, there's a couple things that concern me, and this is where we're at. Mr. Shadoan, I have to be honest, I'm kind of disappointed in your testimony in that I am not convinced that the testimony given has either given a compelling reason not to do this, nor do I feel like it gave a compelling reason on the efforts that have been made to actually dig deeper into the passionate side of this issue, like opportunity gaps and how we solve for them, how we have a board that is both equitable and consistent across the board about making sure that all voices are heard and that we are having the difficult conversations that need to happen in order to have a more equitable board, to have a system in place that is actively working toward closing those opportunity gaps. Because quite frankly, whether you live in Maple Grove or you live in Brooklyn Park, it shouldn't make a difference. You have the right to a good education. And I think that Representative Quam, as he stated so eloquently, that we have not demonstrated that the current system that we've been working under has done that. And I don't think it's because individual board members are not passionate. I don't think it's because they don't care, but I know that this is something that takes a much deeper, much larger commitment to get to that equity and close those gaps. And I don't think we have done a good job of that. And I think that's why we're seeing this bill here today. And I know Representative Lee has said that as well. Representative Mason has said that. Representative Gomez has said that. And I think that it speaks to the larger issue that we really haven't done the job we need to do in that respect. This is my one caution and where I came to some struggle with this. As many of you know, I lead, it is my job in life to create high-functioning teams that get to the goal, that get it done. And they find the most efficient way to do that. They make sure that they hit the mark. And the one thing that I want to say is, while I am hopeful that award system will most definitely give us greater representation of individual communities, and I would look forward to that, the one thing that I want to say, however, is that there is a big difference in how we set up a culture for a school board so that we do prize equity. We do prize how we close those opportunity gaps. And that takes a strong and much deeper commitment from every member of the board.
And that does not matter whether you come from a district that has more resources or fewer. It does not matter the makeup of your district, whether you have higher communities of color, or if you have less diversity. That should not matter. Each and every member of the school board needs to function as a team and use the same set of operating goals and principles in order to get the best education for all of our children. And so while I understand that this will do a better job of representation, the one thing that I want to say to our members of the community is that for those folks in the community who feel very strongly about changing the system, I would like to talk to you. And I would like to see those folks encouraged to run for the school board. I would like to see people who are passionate in our communities who are going to be focused on those goals of equity and closing achievement gaps, who are going to work together with every member of the board to ensure that that happens and that we do not continue to fail our students as we move down the road. So thank you, Representative Bang, for bringing this forward. I do also know that this particular bill has an option that if it is not adopted by the board, that it will then go out for a referendum on the ballot for all members of the district to be able to weigh in and have their voices heard. And for that reason, I will say that despite my concern about making sure we have really good candidates that will be focused on these goals, I will actually be in support of the bill today.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have concerns that there's almost too much hope being put into solving this issue by fixing the school board in this way or making this change. Representative Gomez did bring up the 2006 Minneapolis school board changes, and I'm wondering, sir, if maybe you could answer what if we've seen a closing of that opportunity gap, kind of where we sit right now, how this exact type of language is affecting the school system in Minneapolis since 2006. It seems that this type of bill then didn't actually fix some of the things that we're hoping for. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heinrich. Just before you answer, Mr. Schneiderwin, just so members know, we do have the committee room a little bit longer so we can, it's my intention to take up the other bill. We might go a little bit late, but just want members to know that. So Mr. Schneiderwin. So
Mr. Chair, I would have to talk to the Minneapolis District on that and get that information, but we can certainly gather that and share that with you and the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we all agree that there's an opportunity gap that we need to address. I do have some concern over if this is something that is going to solve some of the issues that even the testifiers talked about, which does bother me, some of those issues that they talked about. So looking forward to continuing the conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heinrich. Seeing no other members on the list to speak, did you have any closing remarks, Representative Vang?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the committee's support on this bill. It is very important to our community. This process has been very grassroots from the very beginning. Community members and parents have approached the school board. That hasn't worked, and there's another process of getting 10,000 petition signatures to bring to the school board. That's still an ongoing process, and now they've approached me to give them an opportunity to voice their concerns and address this and be more proactive in addressing the disparities in the district. And so I don't know how more grassroots this can get, so I appreciate the committee's support in this, and I look forward to an ongoing conversation with all the rest of the stakeholders, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Vang. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2725, as amended, be moved to the Education Policy Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Vang, and once again, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is Representative Mason's bill. Representative Mason, would you like to approach the table? So this is House File 2230, and I understand it's moving to the State Government Finance Division. Would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move 2230.
Okay. Representative Mason moves House File 2230 to the State Government Finance Division. Would you care to present your bill?
Okay. Thank you very much. Talking about a change in venue. This bill has to do with updating the cosmetology of legislation, and I will let Mr. Jim Hurst give you an overview.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Salon and Spa Professional Association, a trade association that has been in existence for nearly 100 years, representing cosmetologists in our great state. Mr. Chairman and members, in the interest of time, let me just briefly go over the bill before you. And first off, let me thank our chief author, Representative Mason, and co-author, Representative Tice. This bill basically deals with updating the continuing education requirements for cosmetologists in the state. My client, SSPA, was very pleased to advance close to 10 years ago the current continuing education requirements in Minnesota. What this bill does not impact negatively on any of the current licensees that have to take continuing education. Rather, it primarily expands who may be a provider of continuing education. It also makes a requirement on the providers that do continuing education to also include some information to attendees regarding the topic of domestic abuse and violence. And Mr. Chairman and committee members, basically let me describe this. With continuing education, all cosmetologists have to take a total of 8 hours of continuing education every 3 years, which is the term of their license with the state. 4 hours of that pertains to health, safety, and sanitation, infection control items, and state law and rule. The other 4 hours pertains to what is called professional practice. So we are proposing that the professional practice segment be expanded to allow consideration for a provider to be a franchised salon corporation. In this case, we were approached by Great Clips, which is a wonderful home-based corporation. And in conjunction with their ongoing education efforts within their organization for their franchisee employees, they wanted to be able to offer this 4 hours of continuing education. It makes complete sense, and we support them in that. So the bill reflects, number one, we have to provide a definition for a franchise operation, which is in here. Upon doing this, we realized that a definition of a professional association is missing in the statute, so we've included that. I should inform you that while we are the primary professional association in the state offering professional or continuing education, there have since grown a couple of other organizations that have called themselves professional associations, and they are offering continuing education. This definition does not exclude them in any which way, shape, or form. But basically, it requires that if you are a franchise corporation, if you're a professional association, you have to be based here in Minnesota. And why that is important is because when it comes to renewing one's license, the licensee has to check a box that says, I have taken my continuing education. The state board then does random audits to make sure that they have done so. And so they'll contact the licensee and say, who did you take your continuing education from? They'll say, I took it from whichever provider. The board then contacts that provider to make sure and verify that that is the case. It has worked very well, and I want to thank the state board because they also post on their website all of the different providers of continuing education that individuals can use. And let me just say that in general, overall, continuing education is very well received by the cosmetology professionals in our state. So this bill does not in any which shape or form impede the current process. It actually expands and allows more providers to participate. And the only other thing I want to mention is one thing that we realized that was a failing that fortunately has not appeared since the creation of the law nearly 10 years ago is that all providers must maintain their records for 5 years because of the requirements for the random audits. It occurred to us that while this has not occurred, what happens when a provider decides they no longer want to do this? Then there's no records for the state board to reach out to. So what the bill does that says that in these situations, that if a provider decides they no longer want to do it, they must seek out an existing provider to be the caretaker of those records and let the state board know so that in those circumstances, which again has not happened, but we're being proactive in this, there's nothing that it's seamless for making this continue. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll just conclude by saying, yes, the state board has viewed this before it was introduced. They have no problem with it. And with that, I will conclude my remarks and certainly welcome any questions that any of you might have with the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak on House File 2230? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to member questions. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Mason. Thank you for bringing this bill. I like it. I sent a text off to my cousin who manages Three Great Clips, and I said, hey, is this going to make your life easier? And she said, looks pretty good. It makes it easier for us to take classes and makes it more available. I really appreciate it. And then she said, now to change the initial licensing requirements. So if you have that down the road, that I would gladly help with that if I can. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative West. Any additional member questions? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Mason?
Members, I would just ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Representative Mason renews her motion that House File 2230 be moved to the State Government Finance Division. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Our next meeting will be on Tuesday at the regular time. So, seeing no discussion, we are adjourned.